Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to Future CEOs here on Cliff Central. It's Thursday afternoon, which means it is Future CEOs Day. I mean, and I say that with all the greatest respect to the rest of the shows on Thursday, but anyway, Future CEOs Day here at Cliff Central. Let's quickly start with the question: are you a young, dynamic, ambitious entrepreneur, or are you one of those individuals that is sitting in an office somewhere and you are eyeing that corner office? You want to be able to rise to CEO status. If you're answering yes to that question, well, the Future CEOs is a show that you should be listening to week in and week out. You can download all the podcasts on cliffcentral.com. If you have missed the episodes, we're sitting at around 250 episodes by now. And the conversations just seem to be getting better and better. Joining me in studio today, we have is it appropriate to call you a serial entrepreneur? Is that appropriate? Yes? No?
Yeah, I would like to think that. I'll take it.
Okay, you'll take it. But
I'll take the title.
More than that, you're then the CEO currently of iPay.
Is that correct?
Just please introduce yourself to a Future CEOs community, and then just give us a little bit of history. And if you don't brag enough, I'll bring a couple of things in and we'll see what we can add. Please, over to you.
Well, hi. Hi, Gareth. Hi to the listener. So thanks for having me on the show. So my name is Thomas Pace. I'm the co-founder and CEO of iPay, which is a payment solution that automate bank-to-bank payment in South Africa. What we realized, you know, is that there was a bit of a cumbersome problem when it came to payment and paying via credit card and fraud. And, you know, you talk about credit card, it's magnetic stripe, a chip.
Chips, yeah.
Pins, yeah. None of which you can actually use as a security online to get protected. So we realized what would be an evolution of payment. And then the first thing that came to mind is actually EFT, electronic fund transfer, which wasn't developed 20 years ago just for retail store, but that was meant for online payment. And we looked at it, and I mean, if I ask you to pay me via EFT now, I challenge you to do it under 2 or 3 minutes. So we realized, what if we could automate EFT and make it happen in less than 10 seconds? People say to us, you're crazy, it'll never happen.
10 seconds sounds like a dream.
Yeah. So say that to a CEO. It will never happen. You can't do it. And you'll see what happened. And challenge accepted. We made it happen to the point where we've been running for 3 years now. We've rolled out in 4 different channels, which is e-commerce payment. We've also now integrated in e-billing platform with some of our partners like Sage, Pastel Accounting.
Sure.
Now we're also rolling out with some of the network for SMS payment, which we believe is going to be a huge benefit for both the network and people to be able to buy airtime just on clicking on an SMS under 10 seconds. That's a dream.
Well, I must tell you, first, thank you very much for doing that, because you're solving a big problem for all of us. I mean, it's a headache that I think I certainly face on an ongoing basis. So thank you very much, iPay. I guess we should thank you, right? We should be thanking Thomas. Thank you for starting iPay. Let's go back into your history, though. So, and I'm going to drop a name here, and you tell me how far back we still have to go in order to understand who you are. Ferrari.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that comes back to about 13 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was fresh back from the UK.
Okay.
I just met my wife. And I was looking for a job. I arrived in Paris, and I just came across this dealership with fantastic cars.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I would love to be able to work there. I just walked in, dropped my CV, and ended up starting the following 3 days later. I worked in on a Friday, and I started on a Monday.
Okay, wow.
And over the weekend, I got married.
Okay.
Yeah, so
wow,
that's
an action-packed 3 days.
Quite a memorable time. Ended up working there for about a year and a half. Started washing cars. Ended up in charge of trading cars.
Okay, interesting.
Used vehicle came in, and then ended up in charge of selling the racing vehicles there, which was a really exciting part.
Mm. So let me just ask this question, because I hear you say you dropped off your CV, but it's not as easy as that, is it? Was it that easy?
You know what? I think, you know what? One thing that you learn when you're a CEO, an entrepreneur, is like, people always will tell you, you need to get out of your comfort zone.
Mm.
And, you know, I finished school, I was 16. I don't have a great education. And anyone that would walk with a CV in their hand would hesitate in working in a Ferrari dealership where you got millions of rands of cars.
And millions of rand in one car even.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. Yes. And I think I just got out of my comfort zone. And I was like, you know, do you really want this? Yeah. Which boys will say no?
Mm. No, you're
right. And I just, you know, I just, why not? Let's do it.
Is then that the beginnings of the evolution of you, the entrepreneur? Where did this begin? Do we have to go further back? Where did the risk taking, but the calculated risk taking, really start to take hold?
I think it started in South Africa, funny enough.
Okay.
South Africa is a great country for creating seed entrepreneurs. The opportunities that you have here are endless.
Mm.
You know, you talk about Europe, it's government take care of the people. You don't really have to work. You still get paid not to work and stay at home. So it's not great for entrepreneurs. But you come into a country like South Africa, listen, if you stay at home, you're not going to get a job.
Yeah.
You're not going to get paid.
Yeah.
And I think the challenges that came when I was in South Africa, my English was not to the level where it was today.
Okay, interesting.
Barely spoke English. And it was difficult to find a job. And when I started seeing all those luxury cars and great houses in the Joburg area, I said, like, how am I going to get there, you know? Mm. And, you know, it's not working for someone that you'd be able to get there. I'm like, after working for a year for someone and growing the business and making the millions of rand, I'm like, no, I want to make the millions of rand. I don't want to earn a salary from someone. And that's how it started, basically. Mm.
That was then the switch over.
The click, yes.
There are mistakes that you've been making along this journey, probably quite early on in the entrepreneurial journey. Am I correct?
Correct.
What is your favorite worst mistake that you've made? And maybe one of the early mistakes that you made as well that's quite memorable.
Look, I think the biggest mistake that you make as a young entrepreneur is as soon as you start making money, is not reinvesting that money.
So okay.
First month I created my business and I make like a million rand profit. I went to Volkswagen and I bought a Golf GTI Cash.
Okay.
That was a big mistake.
Sounds like a mistake, yeah.
But I will tell you one thing, is the great thing about the mistake is that they help you build a success.
Mm.
And it's through those failures that you become who you are later on. I think the great asset of my career over the past 10 years was that I failed a lot.
Mm.
I learned a lot. And this is what helps me today in the success that we have with the various businesses.
Talk us then through this really movement into the tech space that you're in, because it's an interesting space. There is a very, very big opportunity all over Africa for this kind of thing because of the very, very fast pace of growth in, for example, the telecommunications industry, the cell phone industry, data, and so on. This moved into tech. Why tech? What's the decision-making process? Let's talk about that process.
You know, like the first job I got when I was in South Africa, and the only job I got, was to work for online business, specialized into gaming, so game development, and it was in many countries. And I think I got very intrigued by it, but, you know, they say practice it till you master it. And what happened is I got to practice and work my 18 hours there. And I got to grow passion for it and love it. And then I realized that, you know, digital could grow very big. You know, there's no limitation. If you talk about a physical store, you can't bring 10,000 people in a Zara store in Sandton City.
But by the way, you were thinking this 10 years ago, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yes. But you can bring them on an online store onto Zara. And I think when you're an entrepreneur, you always push boundaries. You feel that acceleration when the impossible is something that you believe you can achieve.
Mm.
And that's why digital seemed right. And I think the evolution over the past 10 years is the fact that online payment is the future.
It's a given, in fact, right?
You're paying now, if you use some of the local e-wallets or Zapper and SnapScan, you're paying electronically using your phone.
Mm.
It's digital.
Yeah.
So this is where we're going. And then we realize, you know what? What would be the best position to be in the world? Would have to have a better product than Visa and MasterCard, wouldn't it? And I think that's what we're trying to achieve. So it is
that's
impossible.
A big dream. Wow.
Everyone says it's impossible, and I'm like, bring it on.
Yeah, bring it on.
Let's make it happen.
No, fantastic. Let's then go into the iPay journey for a moment. The challenges that you faced early on there, what were some of the things that maybe you had to very, very quickly readjust? And of course, they call it iterations. You had to go through a number of different phases, perhaps. What were these? What was the experience?
I think any great success always happens when you have great partnership. And for me, it wasn't my first business, so it was kind of not easy. But I understood the routine. The first 2 years, you're gonna have to slave.
Yeah, slave and struggle and just make sacrifices.
And if you don't have a passion for it, you're not gonna be able to go through the tough time.
Mm.
And I think the biggest challenge for me was to try to explain to my partners that it was going to get better, because for them it was the first time.
So it was a new experience for them.
Correct. So I've got two great partners, Mitch and Adam and Lyle Edstein. They come from a development background. They're brilliant, my geniuses.
Mm.
You have to be behind IP and developed it. And I think it was challenging for them to understand, listen, it's been 2 years, but I'm still working 7 days a week, 18 hours a day. I don't get to spend time with my family. And it feels a bit like a failure when you've had a few businesses and you want to accelerate it and you want to be able to basically make things go a lot quicker. But there's also an organic growth that needs to be happening. And that was one of the biggest challenges I faced. And I think today it not only grew the bond that I have with my partner, but it also grew our thirst for success, because we've gone through the worst period.
Sure.
Anything that happened now is just
part and parcel, or
exactly.
It's part of the growth at least.
Yeah.
Because there is a certain window that you have to go through, which is an acceptance window. It's really a brand window, right?
Exactly.
And then move into this idea of growth and so on. And too many people try and force that. Did you try to do that early on? And then maybe a second question, something very close to that, is how did you get through your first 2 years the first time?
Okay, so I think organic growth is the most important part. And when we try to actually force it, we realize it couldn't work.
Mm.
You know, you can't force a consumer in using your product. IP is a very disruptive payment solution, so you need it. The bank to accept it, you needed the reserve bank to accept it, you needed consumer and merchant to be educated about it and also start accepting it. But most importantly, you know, like, it's not like a year ago we came with a product, went live, and it was an instant success. No, it went through 8 different development phases and redesign, and where it is today allowed us to improve conversion by 300%.
Wow.
Allows us today to grow some of our e-commerce merchants, the EFT volume by 500% per month.
Can we attribute this growth to you listening to the consumer? I mean, is that accurate? What was the trigger to go through these reiterations or development phases that you went through?
Correct. Once you see the behavior of a consumer on, you know, your digital platform, you can study the pattern.
Mm.
Why is there a drop-off at that point? Why is it not proceeding to the next step? Why is there such a high abandon rate? How can we improve it?
Mm.
And, you know, like, you build a success through data and optimization. There's no secret, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what we've done. So not only did we listen to our consumer, did we take the feedback of our merchant, but the data that we gathered anonymously is what we use on a daily basis to constantly optimize our platform, make it more convenient.
I'm sorry, I want to jump back because I see time is moving. Time moves fast in studio, and I want to just talk to you about this idea of the 2 years that are the battle. How did you get through those first 2 years, your first time, and how do you know when to quit? You get to the end of 2 years and you think, okay, now it's going to go great, but it doesn't. Do you quit at that point? Is that the cutoff time? How did you get through the first 2 years? Let's go there first.
So I assume I was extremely fortunate in the first 2 years in the sense that from month one, we made a million-rand profit.
Okay, wow.
So I didn't have to really grind for 2 years.
Sure.
But that's also what helped me basically when Tough Talent Race came, to know that, you know, there is good days. Mm. There is days where there's big payout and you can build sustainability and enjoy it. I think the biggest challenge, though, is you must be surrounded by people that are always going to be able to uplift you, especially if you work with a team. You know, as a leader, you must always be able to show an example, but when they see that you are down, they must also be able to uplift you. And surrounding yourself with great people is what made a success in any business I've been in. When you talk about knowing when to quit, I think that is what makes successful entrepreneur is. 2 years ago, we had spent millions and millions and millions of rand in development of iPay. 99% of the people who would go through says, not interested. No one understood the product. It was too disruptive.
Sure.
Today, 99% of the people sign immediately with it. You have a gut feel as an entrepreneur and a belief in your product. So it's up to you to know if you should quit or not. No one else should be able to tell you.
So the idea of gut feel makes me nervous, though, because someone that has 1 year of experience in entrepreneurship, I don't know if I can trust that gut feel. In your case, you've been going at it for a long time, and so when you say gut feel, I say, you're the boss, you know what you're talking about. Let's talk about gut feel a little bit here. Someone that has been an entrepreneur for 1 year, can they really trust their gut?
I think it's everything comes to practice, you know. It's like, you know, when you're 18, you're 20, you're 25, you're like, I got a gut feel, but you hesitate about listening to it. And then you go to your friend, you go to your family, and then you listen more to the advice. But, you know, as you get older, not that I'm very old, you know, at 34, I still consider myself young.
It's experienced rather than
yes. But I think I learned to listen to my gut feel.
Okay.
And know when I'm right or when I'm wrong. But I still use my team. I still use my wife, who's also a partner in business with me in another agency. And ultimately, I still make the final decision when I feel like I've been advised accordingly. But gut feel is very important.
So it's gut feel, but it's informed gut feel. I think that's what
Correct.
You're saying here.
And, exactly.
And you said it earlier. How do you make a successful tech business? You look at data. You look at behavior. You factor it all in, and then you make a decision.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm hearing here. Let's go to quickly this idea of becoming a CEO versus being an entrepreneur. There is a bit of a difference, isn't there? I mean, there's a gap between the idea that you can be taking risk and then on the other side where you're a CEO, really you have to create a sustainable long-term business that adds value to shareholders. It's a little bit of a different position. How have you been able to balance the two?
Look, I think I always liked being a CEO when as an entrepreneur, I own 100% of my business. We went through a serious round of investment about 3 months ago. And now all of a sudden you've got stakeholders, you've got shareholders that you need to to revert back to.
Yep.
And now you've got the proper title of a CEO, which is you're in charge of the business and you have to report to people, even if you're majority shareholders, you know. I don't like that too much.
Sure. No, I can imagine.
Yeah.
How have you then been able to balance not liking it with the freedom also to act in the way that you feel is appropriate? Because there's stakeholders, there's a board, these kinds of things are in place, and they often are in place for the business to help you. But I guess if we'd look at a famous, example, a Steve Jobs, when he was taken out of his really his own business by the board that they had appointed. Anyway, a little bit of a different situation. Your response to that?
So, you know, I strive on challenges. And a comment I had earlier on is you need to be able to get out of your comfort zone. So as much as I dislike it, I enjoy the challenge of practicing until I get to master it.
Okay.
I want iPay to be a global payment solution. I want it to be bigger than Visa and MasterCard. I want it to be similar to Apple one day, hopefully. And I know that the only way I'll get to do that is by challenging myself and getting out of my comfort zone. Even 11 years later, today in my entrepreneurship career, I'm still learning every day, never stop. And I'm actually thankful with the partners and shareholders that I have today, because I'm able to gather a lot more experience from, I call them Madala.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a great opportunity for us.
So let's just we're running out of time here. We've got maybe a minute left, a minute and a half maybe. You've got a great brand. It seems like you have a great team in place, because you've spoken strongly about that. You have a really good track record so far. You've got through those 2 years. You've got some funding. What are the fundamentals of success going forward? What are those one or two things that you just cannot negotiate that will make you bigger than Visa, as big as an Amazon or these other brands?
Well, first of all, you need to answer a need.
Okay.
You need to also be enabling benefit to that need.
Sure.
The convenience. You need to answer an expectation from a consumer where, you know, it's more user friendly, it's quicker, it's more convenient.
So it's a need plus convenience.
Correct.
I haven't heard that before. Yes. Very nice.
And ultimately, this needs to be driven by passion, because if you don't have passion for it, you're not going to treat your work as an art.
Sure.
And if you look at the design that we have with our solution and everything, we're very artistic about it, very creative about it. The UX flow is very important. So passion and all those points are very important.
Thomas Pays, CEO, founder and CEO of iPay. It's been a fantastic conversation. Thank you for your insights. We really appreciate it. Unfortunately, that's all we have for you today. But if you join us same time, same place next week, you're going to be able to hear more of these kinds of insights. Again, thank you, Thomas. We really
Thanks
appreciate
for your time,
it.
Gareth.
And if you have missed the conversation or joined halfway and you want to hear the rest of what Thomas has been sharing, and it's definitely worth doing, go to cliffcentral.com to download the podcast. We'll see you next week.
Future CEOs on cliffcentral.com.